Hi, my name is Christina Phillips. I'm one of the producers for The Exchange. And when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, one thing I noticed right away when I was screening calls is that as people became more isolated, a lot of people were reaching out because they were desperate for resources. For example, during one of our early shows on unemployment, a woman called me and said, "I don't want to be on the air right now. I just don't know how to reach the Employment Security Office. Could you please give me their phone number? I don't have internet, and I heard your phone number on the radio, so I called you." And what is great is that in that moment, as the call screener, I was able to give her that information in real time, and I get the chance to talk to all kinds of listeners and take what I hear from them and bring that back to our team. So when we're planning shows, we can use that information to know what kind of coverage is best for you. We know it's a difficult time financially for so many people, but if you can, consider becoming a sustaining member or making a one-time gift to NHPR to help support The Exchange and this work that we're doing. You can donate by going to nhpr.org, and there you'll find all of our coronavirus coverage in one place. Again, that's nhpr.org, and thanks.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. This week, some businesses in New Hampshire began a phased reopening, but how was business? And how did both business owners and customers feel about re-entering this remade world? Some businesses not officially cleared for reopening resumed operations anyway, so what is the state doing about that? And south of our border, Massachusetts looks at a phased reopening of its own. If you have questions or comments about the week's news, especially when it comes to reopening the economy, give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. And joining us for this part of the program is Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of Business and Economic Affairs for the state of New Hampshire. He also serves on the Governor's Economic Reopening Task Force. Welcome, Commissioner.
Good to be here, Peter.
So phase one of the state's reopening plan, now underway, allows a number of businesses to reopen their doors while abiding by safety guidelines. As a member of the Governor's Reopening Task Force, what's your response to those businesses who are uneasy about opening or even opposed to opening, given concerns about public health?
Yeah, I certainly understand that. And I think, you know, we're trying to accommodate what the individual business owner, you know, feels is the right path forward. What we're trying to do is really enable a path that allows them to reopen in a safe and responsible way that meets the public health requirements that we have here currently at this point in time in the state, and really be able to sort of, be able to achieve some level of flexibility where we can. And I say that because, you know, as we move through some of these initial phases here in mid-May, moving towards June and so on, we're trying to take an approach that allows us to continue to give businesses that so choose the opportunity to bring back their employees, to start paying people, to start making some revenue back, to try to keep some level of activity, but then advancing that as we go along in a responsible way. So I think it's a good approach so far, and for the most part, it's been pretty well accepted.
So many salon owners, though, have expressed concern that it's not safe to cut hair, given how close they have to get to clients. They're following a variety of guidelines specific to salons as well. But they're also concerned that by not opening, they'll lose their clients. So those who are concerned sort of feel compelled to open, even if it's not safe. So are they, in effect, forced to reopen?
You know, I don't think so. And you know, I understand, we certainly heard from a lot of the cosmetology community on both sides of the equation. I think, again, our goal is to enable where we're able to in a way that our state public health division feels is appropriate and for the circumstances. So people have, of course, their own approach to that, and they're certainly welcome to do that. If they want to open, they can open. If they don't, they don't have to.
In a webinar hosted by the Business and Industry Association last week discussing the state's economic reopening plans, you said One of the biggest threats in all this is the growth of government. You said you were concerned about too much direct oversight and enforcement in the business community. I wanted to ask you to elaborate on that. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, what I was talking about is as we get towards the end of this process, as we get through the period that we're in right now, which is still very much in the clutches of this pandemic in this part of the country. As we come out of that, I really do believe that it's important that we take the time to see what types of regulatory restrictions and otherwise that we've put on the business community and make sure that these are if they're no longer necessary, to really seriously look at how we're going to either roll them back or how we're going to discontinue those requirements and get back to a normal business environment here in New Hampshire. That's what I was referring to, and I do think that that's something that we all need to pay very close attention to as we go through this. And none of us know how long this is going to go on or where it's going to take us. But the role of government here is, in my view, to protect the public health of our employers and our employees and of the public in general. And once that threat is gone, I do think that it's important for us to take a hard look at the requirements that we put on and make sure that where appropriate, we take them off.
Mm-hmm. And does that mean, though, that the government should have a heavy hand in mandating how people should behave, or should the government take more of a hands-off approach, make suggestions, and allow people to decide for themselves what they think is best as far as keeping themselves and others safe?
Well, again, I think our approach has been more towards the latter, which is, you know, we are enabling, as I said earlier, many different sectors of the business community to get back to business in a way that meets what our public health division experts are telling us is an appropriate way to achieve that, and moving through that in a process that slowly, hopefully, over time, allows for those requirements to be relaxed as we go.
Mm-hmm. Along those lines, House Democrats yesterday called on Governor Sununu to issue a temporary order requiring face coverings in public to help stop the spread as businesses reopen. Similar orders were issued in Massachusetts and Maine. Is that something you would support, requiring the use of face coverings in public?
Well, I think we've got a good amount of discussion on that in what we're calling our universal guidance document that really is the guiding document for businesses that are either on the essential list or otherwise operating that try to, it's pretty much par across many different, all the various sectors as to what they need to do. And there is some language in there on face coverings when you're in the establishment.
Sort of suggestions, but as far as a requirement, do you think that's the way the state should go, requiring people to wear face masks in public?
Well, I mean, again, this is part of the balance that we're always up against. And I think, you know, on questions like that, I have to say I'm the economics and business guy. I'm not the public health expert. And we've got a unique situation in New Hampshire, maybe from some other states, particularly Massachusetts. We're not as urban as for the most part. We haven't seen.
But neither is Maine, but Maine did. Maine required it.
Yep. So that's a decision that Maine made, and that's a decision that is always on the table for the governor and public health. But we'll see sort of whether they make that decision or not.
We're speaking with Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of Business and Economic Affairs for the state of New Hampshire. He also serves on the governor's Economic Reopening Task Force. If you've got a question for him, give us a call now, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org. Taylor Caswell, as we've been talking about, the state's taking a phased-in approach, allowing different industries to reopen at different times under different rules. To what extent are you worried about confusion for the public and for owners about what's open, what's not, and what the rules are?
Well, that's a big part of the discussion that we've been having on the task force. And I think that, as I mentioned earlier, that universal guidance document is really made. That's one of the steps that we've taken to avoid confusion, is to make a standard level, baseline, foundational, whatever you want to call it, set of requirements for businesses that are reopening, so that we're not kind of restating it in every case. What we're trying to do is really work through the list of businesses that weren't on that initial essential list and determine what, if any, unique circumstances occur within that sector that need to somehow be addressed as part of a reopening phased approach. And I think when you look at the type of documents that we've been recommending to the governor and public health, that's pretty well reflected. The best way to describe this, I think, from my perspective, is what we're talking about at the task force level is the how. How can these sectors reopen in a responsible way given the circumstances that we're in? The when is really being more decided with our Division of Public Health and when would be an appropriate time from their standpoint. And then ultimately the governor makes the decision as to when that's going to occur and when we will announce those.
What do you make of a possible regional approach, as some states have done? For example, I mean, northern New Hampshire has seen relatively few cases of COVID-19. It's not non-existent, but it's not as prevalent as it is, say, in Rockingham County. What do you make of a possible regional approach?
You know, I think that you know, to your earlier question, might not help the confusion component of what's going on to some extent. But you know, I think we also need to be very cognizant of the fact that, you know, we are as a region in New England very, very tight here. I mean, you look at a much bigger state like Texas or Virginia or states like that, where there's a lot more geography that they have jurisdiction over. We have six states that are all sort of jammed in here together, and if we have one area that's opening ahead of another for things like restaurants, for instance. What's the impact of that going to be? And people have shown a willingness to really go where the opened facilities are. And what's the impact of that from a public health standpoint? So there's all sorts. This is just a constant balance. Whereas if we have, you know, hundreds of people from out of state going to, you know, rural regions of the state to eat out, what's the impact of that region going to be at that stage? So these are all considerations that are going on.
I want to shift gears and ask you specifically about summer camps. Can you provide an update on where the issue of summer camps currently stands? Are camps going to be open? And if we don't know the answer yet, when will the state decide?
I don't think we have a firm answer on that yet. I think the task force has got that on the agenda for next week, which, as you know, is a process. We'll go through the process, make a recommendation, and then it will go over to public health for their consideration. And ultimately the governor. So we realize that we're coming up against a lot of sort of go, no-go decision points for both the camps and for the campers and their parents. So we're trying to move that through. But that's one of the ones that I think takes a little bit of time to really, really consider what are some of the ways that we hopefully could be able to move them in a positive direction, but not put anyone in undue risk, a health risk.
Are there certain sectors of the economy where you think reopening will be more complicated?
Yeah, I think some of them are more complicated than others. You know, the cosmetology decision was certainly not an easy one. Dentists being open. I know right now we've got under consideration fitness centers and spas and massage therapy and those sorts of things. Those are very close contact situations. We can certainly see from the standpoint of economic development and the economy that those are really important things for a lot of people, particularly, you know, those with, you know, pain and pain management and those things. We're really trying to move those quickly. But at the same time, the public health situation remains what it is. And so it's, again, a really difficult balance in that, you know, not many of us really enjoy doing this, but this is it is a constant on the high wire here, trying to get these pieces right.
Mm-hmm. And the state has said it will provide face masks to businesses that are reopening at no cost. What kind of demand has the state seen for these masks? Is it able to keep up?
Yes, we're able to keep up, but the demand is huge. Thankfully, we have had a really fruitful effort in bringing those types of masks to New Hampshire and other PPE equipment. Over the last couple of weeks, which has really kind of enabled us to be able to do this, it's an ongoing effort. I know there's more coming in soon, and a lot of our companies have been ramping up here in New Hampshire and providing where they can. So it's been a little bit of all hands on deck on that, and when we got to the point where we were able to get a lot of that priority equipment to our first line responders and to the medical community and hospitals and so on. We really made it a priority to start moving those into our private sector as quickly as we could. So we hope to be able to continue to grow that capability over the next couple of weeks.
So over the next couple of weeks, you said, we'll get more PPE?
Yes, that's the goal.
Gotcha. Okay. So as a task force member, you were asked to address several issues facing the workforce, including the possibility that the difference between unemployment compensation and market wages might encourage some people to stay out of the workforce. Have you seen evidence of that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's definitely an issue for a lot of employers, and particularly for our, you know, I would say like for our restaurant community that's coming online next Monday, that certainly presents a challenge for them. But at the same time, you know, that's what we're dealing with the addition of the federal benefits to the package. It's just an additional challenge. I think for a lot of people, though, that's a really important benefit. At the same time, who might not be in that category or might not be able to work for whatever reason it is. So that is also one of the many balances that we are trying to negotiate.
And related to that, you know, businesses without adequate staff might find it difficult to comply with public health protocols, putting workers, customers at greater risk. Is the state monitoring that potentiality at all?
Yes. We're certainly aware of all of these challenges and are hopefully going to be in a position to be helpful with those businesses to be able to get where they need to go, PPE being one of those examples. But yes, the workforce issue is one that has been challenging for a number of our sectors. And, you know, that's, I think the federal benefit goes through June, through most of June. So these are decisions that individuals are making. Again, you know, going back to our earlier point, there are a lot of options here for a lot of people. A lot of people would rather be working. A lot of people would rather stay home because they've got kids and the kids are still in school technically, you know, learning at home. And that's a huge challenge. And to be able to have at least that benefit, to be able to accomplish that, maybe ultimately get back into the workforce as time goes through here, those are all questions that people are struggling with, whether they're an employer or whether they're an employee right now. And we're all in the same boat on this one.
We're speaking with Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of Business and Economic Affairs for the state of New Hampshire. He's also a member of the Governor's Economic Reopening Task Force. Give us a call if you've got a question for him. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Taylor Caswell, just yesterday, the CDC released some long-delayed guidance on what businesses and organizations should consider before reopening. This is part of a document that had been shelved more than a month ago by the Trump administration. That's according to the Associated Press. But about 57 pages of even more extensive guidance have yet to be released. That guidance might be important. Does it give you pause that the state's reopening without having that yet?
I have a lot of confidence in the state's ability to gauge what the risks are and what the challenges are. And I think having this task force in place, which is really a mix of bipartisan legislators as well as representatives of the public, of the private sector, are all sort of working together to identify what those unique circumstances are. We're bringing in people to talk to us about what those challenges are, and we're trying to build all of that into a thoughtful and deliberate process that moves this forward as quickly as we can, but also, of course, continues to recognize the public health challenges. So I think the federal guidance is welcome and will be integrated into some of our discussions, but I'm pretty willing to bet that a lot of the stuff that's going to come out of that are things that we're already dealing with on state level.
Mm-hmm. And is there any specific guidance from the federal government that you're still waiting for?
No.
No.
I would not say that.
Okay. One model by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention includes the assumption that the infection rate is going to increase up to 20% in states that reopen. Governor Sununu himself has said that the state's likely going to face a surge in the fall or winter. So if that is the case, then why reopen as opposed to maintaining what had been the status quo?
Well, I mean, we'll go to the balance response, but you know, we're trying to move forward in a responsible way, but we can't just have no economy. I think that, you know, that's that's not really an option from our standpoint. People have to be able to continue to support themselves and their families, whether they own a business or whether they work somewhere. And we're trying really hard to recognize all the things that are going on in this universe right now and be able to say, from a flexibility standpoint, here's where we're going to be today in the middle of May. This is where we see the state of the world. We certainly hope that all of the measures that are being undertaken as through the stay-at-home order and the use of PPE and so on, will continue to keep these numbers low. But the flexibility, I think, over time is going to need to be able to go both ways. And so hopefully we're going to continue to see the public health numbers go in a positive direction and as a result continue to be able to reopen as much of our economy as we can. But we're not just going through a process of just, picking a couple of sectors and saying, oh, what the heck, let's go with them. It's a very thoughtful process and very informed from all the important experts at every step.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Kathleen in Bristol. Kathleen, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I haven't had the opportunity to follow the whole conversation. I actually called the number for a different reason, but I was asked to speak as a small business owner from Bristol.
Okay. So what's your take?
I have a community paper called The Hometown Voice, and I haven't been, I stopped delivering my paper at this point. It's because it's a paper that encourages people to shop, and I don't feel that I should be sending people that message right now. It's been a huge sacrifice to me, and the people in my community are suffering. But I think we need to open up our businesses responsibly, because I think that we need to put my customers are my friends and neighbors, and they've been very supportive of me over the years, and I care about them, and I think that we need to put our health and well-being before the economy, and that maybe we need to, it should not be politicized whether you wear a mask or not. If it makes you, somebody else, feel more comfortable to wear a mask in public, maybe you should wear a mask in public, even if you don't believe in that yourself, because it just gives somebody else more freedom. I think we need to be working together in ways that make each other comfortable, and we need to be putting our health and our hearts before we put our pocketbooks.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. Really appreciate that. And I want to pick up on one thing Kathleen said, which was that she's not encouraging her shoppers to shop. And there are a significant number of people out there, Taylor Caswell, who, businesses are reopening, but they are not confident that regardless of what safety procedures are in place, that they're going to be safe when they shop. I'm curious what you think about that and whether or not it was wise to reopen in any phase, given the level of public confidence right now.
Well, again, Peter, I think a lot of this discussion needs to weigh on the individual. As I said earlier, we do not feel that a complete shutdown of the economy, and even in this circumstance, is the best choice. And there's a million different reasons for that, but at the same time, we understand that that has to be restricted. So, right. For instance, with the restaurants, they're coming online on Monday, but it's outdoor seating only. Now, that's not going to work for every restaurant. That's not going to work whether it's a physical layout that they don't have the space to be outside, or whether they're going to make a financial decision as to whether or not that level of investment to open, to get a workforce in line, to invest in maybe some outdoor tables and that sort of thing, with the reduction of the number of patrons that would likely be there, that's a decision that they have to make. Now, as we continue to go forward, hopefully those things will relax. But they're not going to relax unless there is a decision from the state public health experts in HHS that is going to be manageable from a public risk standpoint. So I keep saying this balance, and it's really difficult to hope that we're getting it right, but at the same time, we're really trying to enable people to make those decisions for themselves as to what, you know, is what they consider safe and what they don't consider safe, whether you're a business owner or whether you're a customer.
I see. Taylor Caswell, we got this comment from Peggy in Hollis. She asks, what is the plan for hotels and lodging places?
Yeah. So right now, hotels and lodging places are able to operate if they are serving sort of the essential populations, and that's medical, that's you know, anything that was in our essential list, but it's primarily, you know, medical people that are moving around. And so, you know, in Manchester, you have planes that fly in. You have the pilots need to stay somewhere. You know, things like that. I think we passed the recommendation we did yesterday to start reopening the accommodation, the hotels and accommodation facilities at some point in the future. We didn't put a date on that. Again, that's a decision that is over at public health now. So we're waiting to hear what they're going to decide.
Well, Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of Business and Economic Affairs for the state of New Hampshire, thank you very much for speaking with me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Peter.
Taylor Caswell also sits on the governor's economic reopening task force. We're going to be talking more about the reopening of New Hampshire's economy with a couple of reporters after a quick break, but we're still taking your questions or comments. Are you a business owner who had to make a tough decision this week about reopening? Are you a customer waiting for the right time to go back to your favorite shops? Or do you think now is the right time? Let us know. Our number is 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. Monday on The Exchange, we begin a week-long in-depth series, COVID-19 and healthcare. Each morning next week, we'll examine a different way the pandemic is reshaping our healthcare system. And on Monday, we'll be discussing the impact on rural healthcare in the state. Listen all next week, each morning at 9 on NHPR. Right now, we're talking about the COVID-19 news of the week, and we've got a couple of reporters with us to help inform our conversation. NHPR's Todd Bookman joins us by Skype, and Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor is here as well. Thank you very much, both of you, for being here.
Good morning, Peter.
Listeners, we'd love to hear your insights as well. We've been talking about the reopening of the state's economy. Have you been patronizing businesses that have recently reopened? Are you a business owner? Let us know your perspective. 1-800-892-6477. And let's start with you, Todd. First, let's get an overview. What's open at this point and what's still closed?
Well, in New Hampshire this week on Monday, we saw retail reopen. And by that, we mean customers are allowed back inside of stores, but there's a whole bunch of restrictions. We also this week saw golf courses reopen, hair salons, barbershops, drive-in movie theaters. The malls have now reopened as well. And that comes on the heels of earlier this month, we saw campgrounds get the green light to reopen. Dentist's offices are reopened. Most state parks are reopened. Hospitals can again deliver elective surgeries and some other treatments. And then the big thing that will open next week are restaurants. Restaurants starting Monday can serve customers outdoor seating style. We still have a lot of things closed, though, of course. Gyms remain closed. Movie theaters, performing arts venues, amusement parks, things like that. Tattoo, body piercing facilities are closed, charitable gaming. As Commissioner Caswell noted, hotels and short-term rentals remain closed. And of course, beaches. I think beaches are high on everybody's list with the warmer weather coming up, but they're still closed in New Hampshire.
Still closed, the beaches. Okay. And can you give a sense of what the shutdown, the part of which remains in effect, what's that done to the local economy?
It's been seismic. We know that since the start of this pandemic and the closures of large sectors of the economy, something like 180,000 people in New Hampshire have filed and begun collecting for unemployment. We got some new numbers out yesterday that included 9,000 more people in just the last week or so who filed a new claim for the first time. We should note that that's way down. In early April, it peaked with 40,000 people in a single week filing for unemployment. We should get a sort of first official look at the state's unemployment rate next Tuesday. and we're expecting, you know, we've seen forecasts of anywhere between 12, 15, 20% unemployment rate in the state, which is just sort of unbelievable compared to where we were last month, which is under 3%. We know which industries are being hit hardest, and it's what you'd expect. It's restaurant workers, a huge number of hospital employees that were furloughed or laid off or saw their hours reduced. Lots of people who work in dentists' offices, childcare, daycare, beauty salons, department stores, hotels. You know, a survey from UNH last week found that essentially one out of every two households contains a member who either lost a job or saw their work hours reduced. So this is spread throughout the entire state, the economic impact. Very few people are spared.
Let's go to the phones real quick and talk to Leif in Plymouth. Leif, thanks very much for calling.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I own a tattoo shop in Plymouth, New Hampshire. It's called Gunslinger Tattoo Company. It's just myself and an apprentice. And I'm confused about the reopening of things like salons and barbershops while my business is forced to remain closed. I have a very close friend who owns a salon who was, you know, I saw her just a couple of days ago, and she told me that she had already seen, you know, tens of people. It was something like 40. I don't see 40 people in my tattoo studio in 3 weeks, generally. I'm a very small operation. I typically see 1 to 2 people a day. If that, you know, some days I don't even need to see a single person. And I already use the, you know, these recommendations that the CDC have for PPE, things like that. You know, I don't normally use a face shield, but I'm certainly willing to, and I have no problem with that. I already have them. So I'm just confused about the way the state has gone forward as far as limiting my ability to work while opening it.
Yeah, certainly.
That I see are far less prepared.
Yeah, I take your point. Thanks very much, Leif. We'll get to that in a moment. I do also want to take one other call before we turn back to our reporters here. Renee in Kentucky, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Thank you very much for calling.
Yes, I want to talk about masks.
Masks, okay.
Mask in work, because I will not go into a business where I see people without masks talking to each other, because I don't think people understand masks too well. My mask, which I wear, is protecting them. It doesn't protect me. The other people need to wear masks to protect me. Mm-hmm. So we're protecting each other, which I think is a very American thing to do.
Well, Renee, thank you very much. Really appreciate the thought. Turn this back to Todd Bookman and maybe you, Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor. First of all, to Leif's question about tattoo parlors, have you heard anything in the state's plans about whether or when to reopen the tattoo parlors?
Yeah, so yesterday the reopening task force that Commissioner Caswell and about 20 other people serve on did hear a presentation from the body art industry. So this would cover tattoo artists and body piercing facilities, essentially making very much the claims that Leif in Plymouth just made, which is that, you know, those facilities can follow very much the same protocols as hair salons, that they, you know, essentially are in the same amount of close contact with people. They reiterated that COVID-19 is not a bloodborne pathogen, as far as we know, and so any risk there from getting a tattoo is no greater or worse. And that, you know, one interesting result of all this is that underground tattoo artists are popping up. So people are either ordering, you know, their own tattoo guns and power sources, or these sort of unregulated, unlicensed folks are traveling and throwing what are often called, I think, kitchen parties, where they're essentially tattooing whole groups of people sort of unregulated. And so that's obviously not a good thing from a public health standpoint. And so the tattoo artists really were forceful yesterday, sort of pleading that they also be allowed to reopen under many of the same restrictions as hair salons. To Renee's point about masks, it's interesting, under the state's guidelines, any retail shop, you know, every employee is required to wear masks at all times. If you walk up and down Main Street, I'm sure Ethan can chime in on this. I'm not sure we're seeing 100% compliance on that, though. Certainly customers do not have to wear, but they have been encouraged to wear masks when they head in and out of retail shops, though.
What do you think, Ethan? You've been doing some reporting in downtown Concord about Concord businesses. What do you see with respect to masks and customer comfort levels?
Sure. So there's kind of a divide, and it kind of speaks to the bigger divide with this whole reopening process between Main Street and then some of the big box stores. My experience walking, I've been going to Main Street businesses in Concord. Most of them do have signage requiring masks, and they do have stations near the front door that actually have disposable masks and hand sanitizer available. A lot of that is courtesy of the state opening up the stockpile that was originally for healthcare facilities and has now been expanded to businesses that, that Caswell was talking about earlier. And so a lot of businesses have been able to get these disposable masks and are distributing them. But then you go to some of the big box stores, again, there is no state mandate for either people to wear masks in public or for businesses to require masks indoors. And so you'll go to places like Target, places like Walmart, and the mask usage it varies a lot, but it's usually much lower than in some of these smaller Main Street stores, which have much more control and can put a firm sign saying, do not come in without a mask. I think there is a bit of a divide there.
Let's talk to Paul in Plymouth. Paul, thanks very much for calling.
Yes, thank you. My question is, again, along the same question with the masks. I'm a podiatrist. I work with people's feet in a very close proximity. And when I opened this past Monday, I required all of my customers to come in wearing a mask. I wear a mask, actually a double mask. And the question I had is, when I go into, say, a place like a grocery store, large grocery store, it's maybe 30 to 40% usage. I require it. Why isn't the governor making a state mandate or law or whatever they need to do to require it and enforce it? Because, again, as one of the other callers had mentioned, we're protecting the other person, not themselves.
Right, Paul. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. So along those lines, 178 House Democrats had signed a letter urging Governor Sununu to issue an executive order requiring the use of face masks, as you would want, Paul, when people are out in public and they can't socially distance, perhaps. Ethan, have we heard anything from that on Governor Sununu on the issue recently?
Yes. Governor Sununu's spokesperson yesterday issued what has essentially been Governor Sununu's line throughout this pandemic, which is that he draws a line at requiring masks. This is something that the states of Maine and Massachusetts have required. The state of Vermont has not required. And that letter yesterday is significant because about 2 months ago, the House Democratic Caucus sent a similar letter with over 100 signatures that asked the governor to shut down large portions of the state. A few days later, he did that. So I think for the Democrats in the House, they're hoping that they can, again, put pressure on the governor to make masks mandatory. I talked to Majority Leader Doug Lay in the House, Democrat, who's at the top of that letter. And he says the idea is behind making masks mandatory is that if the state reopens too quickly and there is not mandatory mask usage and there happens to be a spike down the line, there may need to be a difficult decision down the line if the cases grow and get out of control. There may need to be a difficult decision to actually pare back that reopening, which the Democrats are arguing would be disastrous for a retailer or a restaurant that's just trying to work through these new guidelines and all of a sudden has to shut everything down again. So they're raising the risk or they're invoking the risk of potential returning back to the drawing board, which they said would be devastating. But the Republican, House Republican leader, Dick Hinch, his response was kind of twofold. First of all, he said that there has been a lot more compliance with masks on a voluntary basis. And he also said that it would backfire. And you've heard this from other states. You've heard this from the Vermont Governor Phil Scott has also made this argument that if you make it mandatory on the state level for masks, that will backfire, that fewer people will want to comply with that, and that also it will be impossible to enforce. And enforcement is something we can talk about as well. Enforcement has been proving difficult on the regulations the state already has, so adding masks to that can make it harder. So it's a vibrant debate, but at this point, the governor has made it clear that masks are a red line. He is not going to require them at this point, but the pressure is growing.
Let's talk to Alan in Keene. Alan, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, very similar to what you're talking about, but I was, talking about a state agency, the New Hampshire liquor stores, which have become very busy places, and people from multiple states come, and the employees are masked up and sanitizing and doing all that. And it just seems that as a model, they would require customers to wear masks when they come in, or provide them to those who come in without, talking about that, you know, extra supply that's available. Mm-hmm. So I think most people would like to see that happen as a setting a good role model for safe contact.
Alan, thanks very much for your call. And let's turn to Todd Bookman on that one, because you've reported on the Liquor Commission. Todd, what's the status of the Liquor Commission right now? The rules they're operating under, their stockpiles of PPE, if there is such a stockpile, what's happening there?
To the best of my understanding, liquor stores are under the same requirements as other retail stores in the state. So employees of the liquor stores at this point should be required to wear masks, and all the other sort of protocols and the universal guidelines apply to them. But there is no mandate on customers to wear masks at this point, the same way there's no mandate on customers to wear masks in any stores at the state. So that's basically where things stand at the moment.
Thanks for your call, Alan. Really appreciate it. We got this note from Craig in West Lebanon who said, I hear a lot of talk about plans for reopening, which is good, but almost no talk of plans to reclose, either statewide or in smaller regions, if there is a new surge in cases. Is anyone putting plans or guidelines in place for this so that we are prepared if it is needed? That's the comment from Craig in West Lebanon. Ethan, have you heard anything from state government on planning for having to possibly close again in the event of a surge?
I haven't heard anything in terms of actual concrete plans being made, and I very much doubt that the state would want to signal that, given that they have a whole reopening committee that's dedicated towards doing the opposite. But what I will say is that in press conferences, Governor Sununu has been cautious often when asked about this, and he has brought up a few times the potential for having to reverse course, and he's used that in the same breath as saying that this is why the guidelines we put out for retail and for restaurants need to be adhered to, because we can't move through this too fast. And so, but he has been, I would say, kind of remarkably candid about the idea of potentially having to reverse course, given that so much at stake here is consumer trust. And, you know, for a governor to even suggest that you might need to go backward is, I think, significant. So, it's unclear. I would imagine that if it got to that point, then the process would probably play out the same way. It would be an executive order. There would be some signaling beforehand. But as of now, there are no concrete plans that I know of that are being drawn up.
And Todd, what can you tell us about businesses that have defied state orders and opened up when they were not officially sanctioned to do so? Is the state doing anything about those businesses?
What we know right now is that the New Hampshire Department of Justice is aware of at least 6 warnings that have been issued. That's a pretty small number. But 6 have been issued by local law enforcement. We don't have a full picture of those because the Department of Justice didn't immediately provide copies of these letters. We know that a gym reopened early and then promptly shut down. We know a couple of Airbnb or short-term rental units were operating outside of the guidelines by allowing out-of-state customers who didn't meet other qualifications to come.
And Todd, why did that gym close down? Did it close down because it experienced something negative COVID-related, or just some press attention pressured it to close down again?
Well, it's interesting. There's actually 2 gyms. There's one in both in the Upper Valley, one that reopened almost as a mistake. It thought it had permission to reopen based on some previous dates that had been announced. As soon as it was informed that it was not allowed to be open, it promptly closed. And then we know of at least one other gym that reopened earlier this month and is well aware that it's in defiance of state guidelines and has not closed down, and nobody has ordered it to close down as far as we know. But again, these appear to be sort of outliers. Just given the number of warnings that have been issued, it doesn't appear as though we have huge sectors of the economy violating the governor's orders. The state has said it's really not going to take a heavy-handed approach. It's encouraging residents who do spot, you know, either a large-scale infraction or something minor like an employee not wearing a mask to first contact local law enforcement. And then local law enforcement is really much, you know, encouraged to sort of explain the rules, to not issue any fines or make any arrests. Vermont has followed that same tactic. We checked in with them yesterday, and Their attorney general has not issued any fines. So it appears to be sort of a more of a nudging at this point to encourage businesses to comply with the rules. We're not seeing any sort of widespread enforcement at this point.
And NHPR's Todd Bookman, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, thank you, Peter.
And Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor, thank you. We really appreciate your time as well.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk with WBUR's Anthony Brooks about how Massachusetts is handling the COVID-19 pandemic. If you've got a question or a comment, please do get in touch. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just search for NHPR Exchange as all one word on Facebook, and you'll find us. We'll talk more about this in a little bit. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. This virus infects without regard to state lines, and our neighbor to the south, Massachusetts, is experiencing some of the worst outbreaks of any state in the country. Yesterday, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker laid out an ambitious testing goal that he said will create the largest coronavirus testing program on a per capita basis anywhere in the world. Governor Baker also announced a four-phase plan for reopening. With me now to talk about COVID-19 in the Bay State is WBUR reporter Anthony Brooks. Thank you very much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Hey, good to be here.
So Governor Baker has this four-phase plan for reopening. Can you walk us through what those phases look like?
Yeah, this is I describe it as a pretty cautious approach that calls for four phases, as you suggest. Phase one, which could go into effect as early as Monday, and we're going to get a lot more details on this on Monday. It would allow businesses and industries that require limited face-to-face contact with customers to open up. Baker says he'd like to see that happen as soon as it's coming Monday. If that goes well, phase two would allow the sort of second group of businesses that have more face-to-face contact to open up. Then there's a phase three, which would allow a further loosening of the kind of protective measures that we've all grown accustomed to. And the final phase, Baker calls the new normal. It's a long way out. It would be when we finally figured out how to beat COVID-19 with either treatments or a vaccine, and life would return not so much to normal as we've known it, but what Baker calls a new normal.
A new normal.
Now, in terms of how long each of those phases is going to be, they're going to be driven by public health metrics, and Baker has been guided by these along the way and says that these metrics, things like numbers of hospitalizations, the infection rate, number of deaths, capacity in the intensive care units across the state, all those things are going to be studied on a sort of daily basis, which would allow the state to move from one phase to the next or not.
Mm-hmm. And what about cases of COVID-19 in Massachusetts? Are there any trends that we should be aware of?
The trends are basically positive, and that's why Baker is at this point. I mean, we still have a lot of cases. You mentioned in your introduction that Massachusetts is one of the states that has been hit the hardest, and that's true. Baker deserves a lot of credit for recognizing that weeks and weeks ago and doing a lot to prepare the state. The big fear was that the medical system was going to be overwhelmed, like we saw, for example, in New York City. So lots of extra capacity was built up in the state. Field hospitals were set up all across the state, including big ones in Boston and Worcester. And the result has been that the medical system has not been overwhelmed. It's a terrible situation for lots of people and families, more than 5,000 deaths, 3,000 people remain hospitalized. But the overall numbers have been trending in the right direction. So that is allowed Baker to be cautiously optimistic that this cautious phased-in reopening approach is the right way to go. But I heard you talking in the previous segment about, you know, is there talk of what happens if things don't go the right way?
Right, and if there's another surge.
Yeah, and Baker has been very open that, you know, there's going to be some fits and starts and we're going to be going backwards and forwards. And he's perfectly prepared. He's indicated that he is prepared to take steps to, you know, lock stuff down again if necessary. They don't want to do that, obviously, but he says again and again that they're going to be guided by these health metrics.
Mm-hmm. Boston has also launched a universal testing program for homeless people. What was the thinking behind that, and how did that go?
Well, the thinking behind that is the homeless population, of course, is one of the most vulnerable populations, and there have been some pretty serious outbreaks in the homeless community. So, yeah, they instituted a kind of universal testing program among the homeless, and the numbers were alarming. I'm going to try to recall these numbers. I think they tested around 2,000 people in the first phase of that, and 1 in 3 tested positive for coronavirus. So these were very, very high numbers. And in a way, it's not surprising because we learn again and again, and there have been other studies that suggest that, that vulnerable populations are hit especially hard by this pandemic. For example, epidemiologists at Harvard working with the Boston Globe analyzed deaths during the early weeks of the pandemic and found compelling evidence of this, that rates in poor neighborhoods, among communities with high proportions of people of color living below the poverty line in crowded housing, according to the study, the rates of death were as much as 40% higher in these communities. So it's not surprising to learn this about the homeless population. Mm-hmm. Now, in response, Mayor Marty Walsh has set up lots of extra space in shelters, and the big field hospital that was set up in the Boston Convention Center has some 500 extra beds where homeless people who are sick can be treated. So there are provisions being made for them, but it's obviously a very, very concerning situation for these populations.
WBUR's Anthony Brooks, thank you very much for taking some time to speak with me today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we wanted to close today's show with some of the voices you, our listeners, have provided for us. Exchange producer Christina Phillips reached out to several people who filled out our coronavirus survey at nhpr.org, asked them what was giving them hope or joy right now. We heard back from many of those people, and they left us a few voicemails.
Hi, my name is Sabrina, and I live in Londonderry. One thing that has given me joy is TikTok videos. You might be wondering why a 42-year-old mother of two is watching something that was designed for teenagers. And the answer is it's a safe space away from the politics and hate on Facebook and the fakeness of Instagram. There are a ton of 30 and 40-year-old moms and dads that are on there, and they're just having fun, being creative, making fools of themselves, honestly. And it's been a great stress relief for anybody that's on there making videos or even just watching them. You know, a lot of them are in a similar boat. We're all struggling with remote learning. We're all struggling with juggling, teaching our kids and doing our job. We're feeling the stress of having everyone home while we quarantine and trying to make it all work. It's just fun and silly. Who doesn't like watching a bunch of 30 and 40-year-olds making fools of themselves, right? It's great fun.
My name is Michael. I'm from Rochester. And although most of this pandemic business has been quite disruptive, it did create one moment of joy for me in my life. I live 4 hours from my family in New Jersey, and my brother reached out to me knowing that I'd been teaching myself ukulele and invited me to an open mic night. So we had a virtual open mic with a bunch of musicians from New Jersey and myself. And I got to play a couple of songs and listen to some other music from some other musicians. It was an opportunity that never would have presented itself under any other circumstances that I can imagine. So I found quite a bit of joy in doing it. Thanks.
My name is Leslie Pasternak, and I live in Durham, New Hampshire. One thing that has brought me unexpected joy has been the chance to shave my head. In normal circumstances, if a middle-aged woman shaves her head, people usually think that she's seriously ill or off her rocker. But since COVID isolation started, I wasn't the only person on Zoom grappling with out-of-control hair, so I went for it. We had the clippers around since I cut my husband's hair, and this time he got to cut mine. It was a bit emotional, but when it was finished, I could see my eyes in the mirror for the first time in weeks, and it was like, oh, hello. So it gave me an energy boost to keep moving forward, and plus, now my head feels like a bunny. Take care.
Wendy Murphy, Merrimack, New Hampshire. One thing that gives me hope is that every day when I talk to my dad, who has COVID and he's 95 years old in a nursing home, every day that he tells me no temp, no good oxygen level, good blood pressure, and every day that he tells me I'm hungry today, and every day that he says I miss you and I can't wait to see you soon. We haven't seen each other for 6 weeks now, and it's very, very hard, but it gives me hope that he's gone through many, many days now and is hopefully coming near the end of having COVID, but he's doing well. That gives me hope. I need to see my dad. Thank you.
Thanks to Sabrina in Londonderry, Michael in Rochester, Leslie in Durham, and Wendy in Merrimack for leaving us those voicemails. Great to end the week on a positive note, and Sabrina's absolutely right about TikTok. If you find a dadasaur video on TikTok, you can't help but smile. Thanks to everybody who's been on the program today. Really appreciate it. The show's producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Michael Brindley is our program manager, and our regular theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Engineer is Dan Colgan. This conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.